You're listening to the Shared Security Show, exploring the trust you put in people and technology with your hosts, Tom Esten, Scott Wright, and Kevin Johnson. Welcome to episode 241 of the Shared Security Show. And back again is the fantastic Mr. Scott Wright. Welcome back, Scott, as always.
Oh, here, yes.
Okay. And yes, and also back from teaching and events and just being overly busy. That's co-host Kevin Johnson, you can see here. Look at that. He's actually
in the flesh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm overly busy.
Welcome. Welcome back.
I'm actually home this week and next, which is good.
You think? Well, for now, unless plans change.
No, plans aren't changing for next week. I am home next week.
All right. We're going to hold you to that. Awesome. Well, welcome back to the crew. Kevin, good to see you again. Saw you in person. That was the last time I saw you, was in Vegas.
The last time I saw you.
It was. Yeah. So, but we do have some fun topics to get Kevin going this episode. Don't we?
Well, not just Kevin. We'll get a lot of people going.
In fact, there was two stories here that I kind of saved because I did want Kevin's comments on them because they are worthy of discussion. The first story was LastPass. So LastPass had a data breach where they had disclosed that someone had stolen some of their source code, but no customer passwords were compromised. And this topic in particular has been kind of a source of, I'll say, a little bit of controversy in the security community, mainly because, you know, this is a critical application, right? It holds passwords. And I'd also say there's been some, can I call it misinformation, that's been sent out about a password database has been compromised, but it hasn't been compromised. Nothing has been compromised. And I've seen things like advice being given, like change all of your passwords in your LastPass database because source code has been revealed, which could now create or allow an attacker to create an exploit in a zero day all these things. So I kind of just wanted to talk about, obviously, the situation of, I think it's great that LastPass has disclosed this. And I thought they did a good job of disclosing.
The only thing that they didn't talk about in anything I saw, and I want to be very clear, that doesn't mean they didn't talk about it. What they described, and it's slightly different, it's slightly bigger than they got access to source code. They got access to a developer's workstation.
That's the other point, yes.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So they got access to whatever that developer had access to. And what I will say concerns me is we don't know how long they had access and what level of access. And what they didn't comment on was what efforts they did to ensure that the developer did not commit any code. Right? Because if you're a developer, you have the ability to commit code to the repository at some level. And I have not seen any public discussion from LastPass on if somehow, because it is a completely different breach from got access to source code, they might find a vulnerability, they might be able to do this, to they committed code and we screwed up and published that code to every subscriber. I want to be very clear. I'm not saying that's what happened. I'm saying, that's the range, right, of risk.
Of course. Yeah. Of course.
Yeah.
Now, as far as I know, I've not updated my LastPass version. So,
Do we know how long the time frame was between when the breach happened and when they discovered it?
They talk about the time from when the breach happened to when they discovered it. They don't talk about the dwell time of the attacker that I've seen. So we know the attacker came in on January 1st. I'm making that up. Don't quote me on that. I don't remember the dates. Right. Yeah. And we discovered it in February. Okay. Did the attacker come in and then leave and not go back in? Or did the attacker come in January 1st and have access for two months?
It was basically, Yeah, because they said beginning of August, essentially, they detected unusual right. activity. So
Right. So as long as they know when the start was mm-hmm. And when it, you know, when they discovered it, they could go back and uncommit or roll back, you know, commits that were done during that time. So there's at least they could put a plan together, right, for mitigating that risk.
Yeah. I mean, if they're going to do their investigation, of course, they said they've hired a leading cybersecurity and forensics firm, but and they did put together an FAQ with details. So and I guess the other thing I've seen talked about is, you know, we're like holding them to the fire, right? Because, well, they have a critical application being used by millions of people storing passwords. But let's face it, like everybody is going to get hacked if you haven't been hacked already, right? And I think the proper response is, well, how do you respond when you do get hacked? And password database or not, this can happen to any company or any product. Well,
we've talked about this before, right? We talk about it as a data breach, but this is a different type, and I don't think we need to change the name, right? But it is completely different to me that one of your users, in this case a developer, clicked the link, fell for an attack, gave access to their workstation, to somebody has gotten into our network and is running rampant and doing all this. Both of those are data breaches.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
And so that's why, you know, Tom, you mentioned misinformation. Absolutely. There's always going to be misinformation. And when you have a product like this that is so critical, my entire company uses this. We standardized on LastPass as our password manager. I don't have any problem publicly talking about that because we've been happy with how it works and it meets our needs. The minute we saw LastPass has a problem, there was a, oh, damn, let's start looking at this, right? And it wasn't, oh, damn, but I'm not going to say what it really was because that explicit rating. And
yeah.
So, but you're going to see people blast out there. The people who are like, well, you should change every password because the attacker might have gotten access. You know what? If you're going to go down that route, then change them every week. Every week you should change every password in your LastPass storage because you know somebody could possibly get access to them. And bite me.
Well, with that,
bottom line. Yeah, I would just add, you know, I would rather be using a password manager that has had some responsible disclosures in its past than one that has had none. Because as you said, they will have been breached at some point, and if they haven't been around long enough to have had a breach, then that could be a, you know, an immature product.
Absolutely, and I'd rather use a password manager than not.
Than nothing at all, right?
Right. Yeah, because absolutely. Yes, if somebody gets access to my password safe, if they get through the authentication and the two-factor and all that kind of stuff, whatever, right? Like, you know, if they do that, over time, I have still been in a better security state because I'm able to use more complex passwords. I'm able to absolutely ensure that they're all unique across the board instead of, you know, did I use that password somewhere else? You know what? I don't remember. I think I did.
You shouldn't have to remember.
I don't think I did, right? And I've had it happen. I've gone, registered for a site, set up a password, and I use passphrases for everything that supports it, right? And this was a sentence. It was a sentence, spaced correctly, capitalized correctly, punctuated correctly. And LastPass said to me, you're duplicating that password.
Yeah. Sign up.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, yes, it was something like, I'll just take a guess at it. It was something like, I'm here to put the project back on schedule.
You know, in this case, it was something like, I love playing first-person shooters or something like that. Right? Star Wars. It was a gaming site. And I happened to use the same sentence as another one. When LastPass, I'm like, no, I'm not. And it's like, yes, you are. I was.
Yep.
So that's better, right? Like that's. Agreed. So, yeah, I'd rather use one than not use one. And let me be very clear. POS And I can't say it. Never mind. I was trying to come up with a way to write post-its different. And I realized I shortened it at the S. And then I realized what I was about to say and thought, no, that's not right.
No, don't say that.
Yeah. Like, you know, your password safe of post-its is not a password safe.
Definitely not. Definitely not. All right. Well, let's jump to our next story, next topic, with everyone's favorite segment, Aware Much.
I love the way you say that.
Thank you.
Yes, indeed. I like it too, actually. In this installment of Aware Much, we're going to get a little bit geeky, right?
Yeah, you know,
sometimes Scott. Networks are air-gapped, meaning they were designed, you know, to not have any network connections with other parts of the internet or wirelessly or anything. And so we know that those kinds of networks are big targets, and you know, they'll spend a lot on trying to prevent things from getting in or out. So there's, you know, we've seen evidence of things like Stuxnet, right, where somebody got a USB into an air-gapped network, and that was used for sabotage, right? Didn't really have to exfiltrate anything. It just went in and destroyed stuff. But can you really get data out of an air-gapped network? And I've seen many sort of theoretical demonstrations of things you can use, you know, their power consumption and whatever else, radiation. But I think one of the things that we just saw recently was somebody proved that you could use the LEDs on network interface cards to actually send Morse code out of the system or out of the network. And it sounds kind of sneaky and interesting, but in reality, would it really work? Like, practically, how could you get this to work?
Well, I mean, you have to have obviously a camera or something to see the LED lights, and then that's like.
Wait. Before you have the camera, you gotta also get the malware.
Well, the malware. I'm just thinking of like, yeah, that's of course, but yeah.
This is interesting. I want to be very clear.
It's cool research.
Hey, that's cool that you were able to write code that blinked the blinky lights in a funny
into
way.
Morse code.
Right? Like, yeah. And on the same note, I don't care. At all.
Yeah.
I mean,
there could be even other interesting use cases, right? It doesn't have to be an air gap network. It could be you might be trying to observe something from a distance on somebody's computer that you don't have access to their.
Did you see the other internet research? Where we're able to get the blinky lights to blinky in the right way to cause seizures at random people as they walk by. Can you do this? Yes.
Yeah.
Interesting code. Interesting
Well, when it comes
project.
Down to it, if you can get the malware into the computer to make it blink the lights, why not just wait for the next opportunity to get something out the malware came in?
Right? Saying that, like, let's go back to Stuxnet, right? Yeah. Stuxnet could get the stuff in. Getting the stuff out would have been much harder, right?
Harder, but not impossible.
Probably. The other thing about this is, if Tom and I work in the same office, right, and I want to get stuff off of his computer, this is something I could do. Assuming I could see the lights, all that kind of stuff. So that's interesting and that's cool and there's things to do it. Here's what my concern always is: vulnerability fatigue.
Mm. Yeah, yeah,
right.
Yeah,
I have customers right now that are running Windows ME.
Windows? Did you say Windows ME? Not XP, but ME.
Not XP, ME.
Some of our listeners were not born when that came out, right?
Are they in healthcare?
I no.
Okay.
We have customers that have vulnerabilities in real systems that are exploitable and attackable and exposed to the internet.
Yeah.
And when I talk to their staff, their staff is worried about the latest and greatest thing. And it's like, I don't mean to be rude, but you shouldn't be worried about the Morse code LED.
You've got bigger things to worry about.
Yeah. That's the point.
You have basic fundamental problems. And what I would really like to see is all of these groups, all of this funding that is paying for stuff like, can I heat up and cool down the CPU fast enough so that the whirring of the CPU cooling fan speaks the data? Right, like, because that's what's next, right?
No, I have a solution
so that your computer is going to start talking at you, right? This is similar. I saw you guys talked about last week. I'm thrilled you did. The having your CPU talk is the opposite of having Janet Jackson destroy your hard drive, right? but instead of spending research on that, how about we get some research on increasing the efficiencies of patching? How about we do some research on how we can push patches in a way to ensure backwards compatibility while keeping the system secure? How about we do some research on how we can get user awareness to stop being required from everybody and instead teach architects and business people and developers how not to build systems that teach the user the wrong way, right? And I know right now we're not going to solve that. And so we have to have some type of user awareness that is good, right? Which is obviously why ClickArmor is the sponsor of this, because you guys are damn good at what you do. But I'm sorry to say it, we're building systems in ways that are undermining ourselves.
It's not getting better.
And yet, the researchers are excited to be able to blink blinky lights. Guess what? I can blink stuff too.
Well, I got it. The good news is I have an easy tip for people, as because we have a tip in every section of the
electrical tape over your LEDs.
Exactly.
It's the VCR clock solution.
Yes.
Perfect.
So just get a piece of electrical tape, put it over your blinky lights, and just like don't worry about those things.
Wrap up your entire laptop.
And if that tip, and if that tip isn't practical enough for you, why not try ClickArmor's new tailored security basics course for SOC 2, CMMC, and ISO 27001? We just introduced this cool feature where we can tailor the course narrator to look like Kevin or Tom or
That's awesome. You can deepfake people within ClickArmor.
We can exactly. Yeah. So yeah, come and visit us at clickarmor.ca. We actually have a special right now, a 6-week quick start bundle, we call it, for $325 US. It's a great time right now to get ready with Cybersecurity Awareness Month coming up, just to demonstrate the power of gamification and how this kind of immersive assessment and training can work. So look forward to seeing you there.
Thank you, Scott. As always, great topic this week. Love it. So our last story is, this is not a new story to most people if you're in the Twitterverse. So this is a whole controversy about how Mudge, who is Peter Zatko, is his real name. Mudge is a well-known and I will say well-respected individual in the security community. He was a member of the original Loft hacking group out of Boston, if all of you remember that, and was actually
L0PHT.
Yes, one of the very first hackers, along with others like Weldpond, who is Chris Weissopel, who founded Veracode, several other people that went and started, I think, AtStake, which is one of the first kind of real pen test firms, and they actually testified in front of Congress back in the 90s about the dangers surrounding the internet and security vulnerabilities before anybody was actually talking about this stuff. So Mudge has a long history, and he has blown the whistle on Twitter and released all this information about when he was the chief security officer over at Twitter about how they've been misleading the FTC. They've been ignoring bots. They've actually been giving government like information to the Indian government,
hiring people
and all kinds agents. of crazy stuff that kind of put a bad light on Twitter. And of course, Twitter comes back and says, well, he was fired because he had poor performance and ineffective leadership and, all these things, not taking any accountability for anything that that Mudge had said in this. So kind of wanted to get your opinion of this. And I mean, this definitely puts Twitter in a bad light and actually gives Elon Musk something to talk about, right? Oh, yeah. With his lawsuit, especially around the bots. I mean, we've known this for forever, right, Kevin? I mean, we know that most of Twitter is bots. We were bots. And in a lot of our presentations,
some of them were us.
We created bots. They're probably still out there, actually. I haven't checked, but I know, Kevin, you have many bots on social networks that are probably maybe even functioning. I don't know.
They have a life of their own, just like in the Star Trek original motion picture. You know,
they've all become self-aware.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just August 29th. And what is it? Skynet became aware August 29th.
Oh. Yeah, something like that. But
I don't remember how many, like, see the memes all around. So first off, you know, full disclosure, when Mudge was at DARPA, Secure Ideas won 3 cyber fast track awards through DARPA, not because of Mudge, but his program. Yeah. He is who put it forward. So I am somewhat biased to believe the man because he has done good things in the past. Here's the thing. I use Twitter every day. I like using Twitter. Twitter is a cesspool.
It's the most isolated of the internet.
I'm not going to say that things are as catastrophic and as bad as Peter says. I'm going to say that I don't doubt anything he posted. Mm-hmm. And the reason I say that it may not be as catastrophic is not because of him, but because most of what we are reading are articles that are trying to get clicked, right?
Clickbait, of course.
I reading his documentation, reading the stuff he's talked about, I think things are bad. And I don't doubt that. I believe that Twitter has goodness that is accomplished there. But I think that goodness is often accomplished in spite of Twitter, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that for the most part, for most people, what he has put forward has zero impact on our lives other than making us aware of what is going on in a system we're not going to stop using. Right. So, you're right. Elon Musk now has some proof to the things he's been screaming about. That's great. You know, and I hope you heard the sarcasm in italics.
Yeah, and I heard that the Truth Network just hired a new head of security. So.
Yeah, somehow I don't believe that.
I'm just kidding.
The funniest take I've seen on this is people who are saying, you know, if you want to do things that are unethical as a company, you probably shouldn't hire an activist as, you know, your person. And I'm really bothered by that take because why isn't our take stop doing things unethical as a company?
plain and simple.
That blows my mind. Like, hey, you know what? If you're going to do stuff and lie to Congress, which, by the way, let me be very clear. Congress lies to us every day. I'm not sure why we're that surprised other people lie to them. But the idea that the problem here is Twitter hired somebody who had ethics is so asinine and insulting to me. The problem here isn't that they hired somebody with ethics. The problem is they expected any of their staff to not have ethics. And even worse, if even 1/10 of what he is saying is true, what that tells you is a large portion of their staff is unethical. That's what we should be talking about. We should be talking about is the fact that we have an organization that is peopled by people, that sounds dumb, but is peopled by people who don't follow an ethical guidance that the population as a whole believes is there. That's what should bother us. Yep. And I know we need to wrap up soon, so I'm not going to do my entire rant. But I think, and here's the worst part. Here's the worst part. We are going to have a cesspool of ethical violations. Congress now try to rope this in, and all we're going to do is get sound bites for their next election.
and ultimately somehow worse than it is.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, you hit it on the nail this time, Kevin. Completely agree with you.
Thank you.
Isn't that fun?
Pisses me.
Wow.
Yeah. So,
but don't we all have that kind of natural reaction where when you're watching a horror movie and you say, well, if you really wanted to murder somebody, wouldn't you do it this way? You know, if you were,
I've never thought if I wanted to murder somebody, no, this is how I would do it. It's never crossed my mind. I've never planned out murders.
I'll stop talking.
Well, with that, it's a great place to, or great time to end the show this week. But I want to thank you both as always. Great to have both of you back, by the way. So
good to be back.
It is.
Absolutely.
And for all of you, make sure you subscribe on your favorite podcast listening app if you're listening to the audio version. And if you're on YouTube, hit that like and subscribe button. We would it'd be much appreciated.
And visit the sponsors.
And visit our sponsors, of course. All right. Till next time. Thanks, everyone. And we will talk to all of you next week. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, subscribe on your favorite podcast listening app, or leave us a rating and review. To catch all the latest from the show, visit our website, sharedsecurity.net, for all show notes and previous episodes. Follow us on Twitter at SharedSec, and join our Reddit community on the Shared Security Show subreddit. Thanks again, and we'll see you next week for another episode of the Shared Security Show.